rebuild or the favorites. We here for the latest, south side or the north side, not tuned to the greatest. Home team for the home teams, both sides got our own rings. On the mound or the long ball, but we don't pull the wrong strings. Yeah. It's that time of the year now. Wrigley or Gantee, so the whole league that we hear now. New show with a new mood, discussions and interviews. Trade rumors that might be. This is Pinwheels and Knife. Yeah. This is what you waiting for, yeah. You can put it on the board, yeah. Every season, nigga, it all change. Take me out to the bar game. This is what you waiting for, yeah.
This is what you waiting for.
You can put it on the board, yeah. Every season, make it all change. Take me out to the bar game. This is what you're waiting for, yeah. You can put it on the board, yeah. Every season, make it all change.
All right, what is up, everybody? Welcome to the second installment of the Pinwheels pregame show. Joining me is, you know these two already, but we got Aldo and Matt Sawaski here, a.k.a. Father Zoe, and we also got some sponsors. This is very exciting. Pinwheel pregame show has some sponsors. First off, QR code up there. You can go visit Amit. Get a cool T-shirt. They got some Indy 500 gear. They got some cool White Sox throwback stuff. They got some colors. I mean, you name it. They probably have a shirt for you. So check them out. Support the show. Use that QR code, too, to let them know that Pinwheel sent you there. And then, of course, our Sports Mockery, sportsmockery.com. You can read about, you know, it's kind of funny. It's complete opposite sides. The Cubs are exciting. A lot of good stuff happening over there. You can read about, they had some big moves this week. You can read about, and then the White Sox, you can read about their historic ineptitude. So Sports Mockery, sportsmockery.com. Also, Bears draft this week. That's going to be big. So make sure you're checking that out. All right, boys, let's get into it. Talk some baseball here. We'll start with the Sox. Let's get that out of the way first. And that way we can get bids on and talk some Cubs. Last night, they snatched a defeat from the jaws of victory. I'm not going to lie. Like, that was the most frustrating loss for me of the season. Because they did everything right leading up to that. You had a great start out of Fetty. You got some clutch hits in the eighth, and then it all unraveled. So I guess we'll start with you. Some people were complaining about how the bullpen was handled. I didn't have an issue with it. Did you have an issue of how Pedro managed that eighth and ninth inning?
No, people need to, pardon my French, grow the fuck up. And realize that closers aren't only for the ninth inning anymore. That's not how baseball's done. You want your closer pitching against the heart of the other team's order. And if that happens to be in the eighth inning, you want your closer in the eighth inning. Pedro is not mutually exclusive to this. This is done throughout baseball. It just so happens that the White Sox are historically bad, so it shines a bigger light on it. That's all.
Yeah, I agree. And I love to dunk on Pedro any chance I get. But the Sox don't have like a true established closer yet. You're trying to get Mike in that role. But like, if you feel like that's the highest leverage situation, they're facing the middle of the order, that's when you're gonna throw him. And I also didn't have an issue with having Steven Wilson face him in the ninth, because Kopech throws primarily fastballs. Buxton, great fastball hitter. Unfortunately, Wilson grooved him one down the middle anyway, so it didn't really make a difference. Had he gotten out of that eighth inning a little bit cleaner, I think maybe it looks a bit different. Where my issue is right now with Pedro, and it has nothing really to do with strategy, because like these lineups, like he doesn't have a lot to work with. They're trying to win some games. The motivation's low, but you're seeing a lot of the same issues from last season with almost an entirely new team. Gets brought in a bunch of new guys. I think there's only like Kopech was the only holdover from last year's opening day roster, I think. And we're still seeing the same mistakes with base running, poor fielding. That Benintendi play in the ninth inning was also really frustrating, because that was a ball that had an 89% probability of being caught, and he let it drop.
I need to ask you guys, Andrew Benintendi, I mean, there's been a lot of hated White Sox free agents, a lot of hated players from that were, you know, going to the farm system in the past, this past decade that haven't panned out, and they've just failed miserably. But Andrew Benintendi, number one, being the highest paid player in franchise history. But then besides that, it's not that he's bad. You know, they're bad players all the time. He's like one of the worst players. He's the worst player in baseball, I think, right now. He number three. Does he care? Is he trying? It does not look like he gives a shit that all these things are happening. He's like that fly ball I saw. I tuned in late in the game and was like, they like pan to him after. He's just like, what can you do? Ball fell in front of me.
Like, that's one of those things. Throwing around the effort, like the lack of effort or like quitting on your team, I think it's the most insulting thing you can say to an athlete, like that they don't care. So that's why I'm like hesitant to throw that label on him. But it looks like it. Like, that's not the first time. And I know his defense has been deteriorating a bit. When they first signed him, I was not like thrilled with the signing. And I usually drink the White Sox Kool-Aid. I remember right after that signing, I was doing like a grade of the signing, and I think I gave him like a C minus on it. It's like, all right, you know, it's a piece. He plays every day. That's fine. And that turned out to be the biggest addition they had. But his game has just not gotten any better. And he was like, they were touting his gold glove defense. He's looked horrible out there. And I think, like, especially last night, it's one thing to be like looking bad, but like he was jogging over, like the game's on the line. You got a chance to win a game on the road. You only have three wins this year. You would think you would see a little bit more effort. It just looked nonchalant on television. And then when I saw that stat, it was like, yeah, 89% of outfielders would have caught that ball. It was like textbook White Sox.
So where do you think Benintendi ends up in most hated free agent White Sox history?
Up there. I think he might be the next in line of the Dallas Keuchel, Adam Eaton. We paid you too much. We're going to buy you to go the fuck away lineup.
Like, yeah. At least Adam Dunn hit home runs.
Right.
Dunn had a good, yeah, he had, like, one okay season. I mean, he was never great, but
he's the worst. I will give the White Sox some credit. You know, they are consistent on having a top five worst player in baseball on the roster at all time.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah, we thought Tim was the issue. Yeah. Now look at, yeah. Actually, you know, that brings me to another thing. Tim was back in Chicago this week. He had some comments about the Sox. Zoe, I know you had some issues with his comments because, you know, he was a guy that had a lot of attention on him. Then he was saying, you know what, I'm kind of happy. I don't have the pressure anymore of as the White Sox go, Tim goes. You didn't care for that.
No, because the man literally hired a professional photographer and video team to follow him around this city at all times. And he loved being that guy. And then when Abreu left, he literally said at a press conference, I'm that guy. Like, he did this all to himself. And then when you don't play up to that guy status and it doesn't work out and you have to put your tail between your legs and sign a $3 million deal with the Miami Marlins and you don't even really play every day, you can't come back and be like, oh, I never really wanted to be that guy. It fucked me up. No, dude. No, you did this all yourself. You made your bed, sleep in it.
Yeah.
And that, to me, that was just some coward shit.
I don't disagree. I think where he was at fault, because when he first came up, he was more of a quiet guy. Like, even you listen to his interviews, he wasn't really like, it's all about me. The Sox, as he started to like have the bat flips and the highlights, they start marketing around him, telling him like, hey, you're the guy, you know, you're so, he gets on a cover of a baseball game. He starts getting all these attention. He gets on the cover of Sports Illustrated. So then I think he started feeling himself a bit. Where I think he screwed up was all that off the field stuff, I think, clearly weighed on him. And then that's where the play started to decline. And then all of a sudden you have all this attention and that's where the pressure gets to you. Cause I think it was clearly affecting him, but yeah, that was a little interesting to hear about.
Like he was completely leaning into it when he started his rise. And like Zoe said, with his whole video series that he had, like he wasn't saying them like, guys, like, hey, this is great, but like, you know, I'm sure he said positive stuff about Jose Abreu, how he was the team leader, but like he was very much be like, hey guys, I'm pretty good, huh? Like, I'm a star. He kept talking about how, you know, when they were talking about moving to second base, he's like, you know, I'll do it for the team, but you know, I'm a shortstop. I want to get paid like the big shortstops. That's not shying away from you being like, you know, there's too much pressure for me. And that's just the lack of accountability right there. It's like, that all that could happen. Things obviously didn't go his way. Just say, hey, stuff happens. I was bad. That's just all I got to say, man. Yeah. I was bad. It sucked.
He had no problem doing Dairy Queen commercials with Bryce Harper. He had no problem being the face of MLB when he did the whole thing when he hit the walk-off against the Yankees in the Field of Dreams game. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, now this is a problem? You can miss me with that shit, dude. That's fucking coward shit.
Yeah, maybe. Hey, I don't necessarily disagree. Hard for me to get mad at him, though, because while it was going on, I was eating. I mean, I enjoyed it. He made being a Sox fan fun. As much as Jose Abreu is my favorite White Sox to this point, like my Mount Rushmore, like favorite White Sox players, Tim Anderson, I think, was the guy that made that team fun for like three seasons. So I don't disagree. It did kind of rub me the wrong way a little bit, but it's like hard for me to get mad at the guy. It's like, yeah, I mean, when you were in the limelight, I was one of the people that didn't, I enjoyed him being in the spotlight too. So it is what it is. But yeah, back to the current version of the White Sox. It seems like the way Pedro has been like doing things, because like so we were talking about like last week, you said that it might not be a bad idea to send Andrew Vaughn down to the minors for a little bit. One of the things I've noticed too, I think even just a couple days off would have done him some good. And they had scheduled him a day off, got rained out, and then the next day's doubleheader. He's playing in both games of that doubleheader. So, like, that's one of the things with, like, Pedro. It's not even the on-the-field stuff. It's, like, how he's handling a lot of these players, and we're seeing a lot of the same mistakes from, like, last year. I don't think he's putting a lot of these guys, the limited talent they have, in necessarily the best position to succeed. And I think Vaughn is a prime example of that. At this point in the year, though, I would rather, you know, I think you just kind of have to ride it out and see him struggle. I guess, you know, you got to work it out now, find out if he's the guy the rest of the year, because you really have no one in Triple A. And I think the same kind of thing applied for me with like Nick Nistrini and Jonathan Cannon. I was a little surprised they sent him back down. If you called him up thinking that he was ready for the big leagues, then why not let him struggle a little bit? After one bad start, they immediately send him down for Chris Flexen, a guy that's not going to be on the team next year. And I have no problem with some of these rookies. Like if you think they're MLB ready, having them come up and struggle a little bit, because I think with Nistrini, it's kind of similar to Lucas Giolito. Like when Lucas Giolito came up in 2018, he got knocked around a little bit, but I think it's good to have him out there in a season that doesn't really matter anyway. If you're getting shelled one game, finding how to work around that, try and get outs when you're not having your best stuff. They let Lucas Giolito fail a little bit when he first came up. And I would have liked to see the same thing with Nistrini and Cannon. I was a little surprised they sent them back down so early.
Mitch, I have one thing that I've changed my mind about with Pedro Grifol. I've been talking, I mean, that's been a conversation now for the past 2 weeks. White Sox they're 3-20. I still can't believe how bad they are. I know it makes sense on paper. Like, yeah, they have like AAA hitters. They should be this bad, but like, that's fucking crazy. I've been on the camp of like, you know, it's the players. What the hell is the manager going to do? But like, it's getting to the point. You got to fire Pedro Grifol. I have no idea.
They are 3-20. How is no one getting fired?
That alone. And it's not just that alone. Because it's all the shit that happened last year, right? It's like...
And it's the same mistakes with different players. Like, mistakes with different players.
And they got the guy. And, like, you can blame Chris Gass for getting terrible players. But, like, obviously the manager has some say. And, like, they're building a roster of players that Pedro Grifol wants that skill set, right? Like, they want defensive guys.
Grifol's fingerprints were all over the Benintendi signing.
So, like, he deserves some of that blame, too. Like, it's not just all Chris Gass, but, like... The team, defensively, they're not much better than last year. I know there are some young guys, maybe Fletcher. I don't know how much he's played center field, but, like, too many bad plays there. These other guys, I mean, I don't know. Like, Nicky Lopez looks good, but, like, can't hit. Like, he's good on defense, but he can't hit. Corey Lee, I'm with you, Zoe. Corey Lee needs to start, like, almost every day. I don't know what the hell they're doing with Martin Maldonado trying to put up worst offensive season in MLB history, but
Martin Maldonado has two more major league hits than I do this year. And they play him every day.
He only had two more than you last week, too. It's been another week, and he is still only has two more.
It blows my mind.
We're going to have to start drinking a beer every time Ronaldo gets a hit. We might get to five this year.
Corey Lee actually looks decent, too. Corey Lee's hitting the ball. He's faster. He's not a liability on the base path. You brought Martin Maldonado in for defense. He's fucking airmailing balls into center field, missing pop flies. What are we doing here?
He knows how to call a good game, but how is it helping your pitchers, especially your young pitchers, by letting guys get free bases and move into scoring position? He's not helping anyone back there. He's giving them no run support. Guys are getting free 90 feet every other inning with him. It is frustrating to watch him. Nicky Lopez, too, I think was a guy that he would have been a decent signing if he's not your everyday starter. I don't think they, and now with all the injuries,
he's a backup. Yeah. Yeah. But he's your starting second base.
But even with the defense has been that Lenin Sosa play. Let's talk about Lenin Sosa for a second. Cause he got sent down this week too. I have a theory. And I was talking to one of our other sports mockery writers, Craig, about this. You saw Oscar Colas. He kind of got that treatment where there's a lot of mental mistakes early. Not a great approach. We heard there was some Locke may or may not have been some attitude issues. Who knows? But what we could see on the field, lack of discipline at the plate, a lot of mental errors. He got put in their doghouse early. They Pedro called him out. Getz said, had some comments. We haven't seen him up for an extended stint since. I think this is probably the end of Lenin Sosa. His at bats haven't looked good, quite frankly. But then you see him on that botched rundown. It was a perfect example of what you're not supposed to do in one of those rundowns. You just take the out. Especially with Trey Turner at third base. Pedro said something about him after the game. I would not be surprised if he gets the Colas treatment where they're going to make him a scapegoat. And not saying he deserves to be back up, but I don't think he comes up for an extended stint again. I think that's the last we see of Lenin Sosa.
Sosa is a quad A player.
Yeah.
Sosa went back down to AAA. His first at bat, he ripped a double in the gap.
That's another guy I was wrong about. I think we talked about it last week, though. We're saying who needs to. Danny Bendick came up and who is he going to replace? And we're you got to play some of the young guys because you got to see if they're good or bad or somewhere in between. And I was saying, just keep Sosa. But no, you were right, though. That guy sucks.
He's bad.
Maybe it's undeserved, but he's been too awful to just keep getting chances.
Well, since you brought his name up, Mitch, since this is your show, I will formally apologize to you. You were right about Danny Mendick. I'm still more handsome than you, but you were right about that. And one of the things that I liked about Danny Mendick, and I think they touched on it a little bit in the broadcast, he's ripping home runs down in AAA, right? And they're all pull shots or center field. He comes up to the big show, and his first at bat, he hits a fucking opposite way. I think it was a single. But that just shows me that he's not trying to – he knows how to, contribute to a major league team. He knows his role. Whoa. He knows his role and everything. So I'm good with Danny Mendick right now, even though a couple times when he's running to first base, I get really nervous because it feels like something's going to pop. But, yeah, that was a good call. Danny Mendick's okay with me. Again, he should be a backup, but
yeah,
this team's full of backups.
But he should be your guys' next GM or manager, or hitting coach, something. Visit homage. Homage. But that quote that he had is that was the complete opposite of Menichino, bat 300, and he's like, no, we need to hit doubles, we need to hit home runs. That's how you win. And I'm like, yes.
Yep.
Yes. Danny Mendick, finally someone in the White Sox organization knows how to win. Danny Mendick for president for the White Sox. That should be your guys' next campaign.
Quick positive.
Martin Maldonado, bench coach, Danny Mendick, GM.
Two quick things I want to touch on before we get to the Cubs stuff. One quick positive, Eloy, he hit a second home run, only 38 more to go to get to his goal of 40. So, just fingers crossed he can stay.
He's heating up.
Yeah, yeah. So we got that going for. This is the other thing. Final thing I want to talk about with White Sox related. I see a lot of negativity surrounding the White Sox new broadcaster, John Triffitt. And I get it. He's trying. He comes across a little cheesy and corny at times. But I think he is in a very tough spot. You're replacing a guy that was almost universally liked on the South Side. One of the best broadcasters, not only in baseball, but Fox hires him for college football. He's one of the best broadcasters out there in Jason Benetti. So not only does he have to replace a guy that was well-liked and very good, big shoes to fill there, he's covering a team that's terrible, like historically bad. It's hard to get excited about it. And I appreciate the fact that he tries to bring some energy to each broadcast. I think he has a good delivery on a lot of his stuff. Yeah, you know, sometimes it seems like he's pressing at times, but he gives a shit. He tries. You know, he's trying to, you know, the fact, how many other announcers in any sport would be out tailgating with fans in opening day? Yeah, I see him too, like after some of these games, like he'll be up in the press box waving down at White Sox fans and whatnot. So I think cut the guy a little bit of slack. He's in a very tough position right now. He's trying to stay positive about a team that, quite frankly, is unwatchable at this point. So I'm going to defend Schriff. I know he's getting a hard time from some folks on Twitter. I don't think he's doing that bad of a job, though.
So I got no problem with his cheesiness. I got no problem with him being over the top, trying to make something that's unwatchable watchable. My deal with him is when he fucks up general baseball knowledge. And he's done it a couple times now. And the other thing he does that drives me crazy is any fly ball that's halfway decent to the outfield, he starts his home run call. And it drives me insane. Like, dude, you got to calm down a little bit. I know.
But you're going robot on us, though.
What?
You went robot that last 10 seconds.
Am I gone? Oh, okay, yeah. But basically, this is the great fucking state of Indiana. But basically, it's the general baseball stuff that's bothering me. It's the biggest thing, that though, especially with this team being as bad as it is, it's become a lot of background noise for a lot of us. And if it's background noise and you start your home run call every time there's a fly ball hit, you can't be doing that. That drives me insane. So
that's
I'm okay with the guy. I'm not trying to like give the guy shit. I'm cool with the guy and everything. I'm going to give him a chance. He's just, those are some of the things he needs to iron out, though, for sure.
Yeah, definitely work in progress. All right, we got Fids here. He's wearing his shirt from Ahmed. You can scan the QR code, get one just like it. Fids, there's a big controversial DFA this week from Cubs land. You are not too happy with it. I was a little confused by it, too, watching the Cubs from a distance. Looking at the numbers, I was like, oh, this guy looks like he's playing pretty well. I'll let you take it from here, Fids. Explain the Cubs move, why you are not a fan of said DFA of our first baseman friend, former All-Star, Mr. Cooper. You're muted. There we go.
I heard the bell go off. The bell went off, and I heard an echo, so I want to make sure that didn't get the bell going. But yeah, Aldo pointed out some stuff yesterday in our DM too. But you know, for me, Garrett Cooper was probably one of my favorite offseason acquisitions for the Cubs because of the fact that Michael Bush, the Cubs' rookie first baseman, was going to be thrown out to the Wolves basically this year, and he was going to have that developmental time of going out there and performing and struggling. And I love the fact that Garrett Cooper was brought in as a right-handed option for the platoon. You have this situation where you had a guy that could obviously also play a mentor role, but also just takes the pressure off him. Michael Bush doesn't have to go out there and be the guy. Now, we've also seen desperation with the Cubs lineup recently because they're hitting like shit, and you've had to move Michael Bush, a rookie, into the cleanup spot, which is never optimal for any situation. But you know, Cooper was performing. He was getting I know he had a little bit of a slow Miami series, but he was still second and third on the Cubs when it was barrel rate. His on base percentage was, you know, beyond 400. You know, all I heard about Mike Talkman was, well, his on base percentage is still great, even though he only has two hits out of, you know, 40 at bats, he's still getting on base. He's taking walks. Then Garrett Cooper goes up there, gets on base frequently. He's DFA'd yesterday. He didn't even last as long as Hosmer did last year, for God's sakes, a month less. And this is a guy that actually is an all-star. Oh, I'll let the light turn off. That looks fine. Energy saver. Hello. You take a guy out of this. Now, all of a sudden, you bring up another rookie and another left-handed bat, so there's no more platoon. And you're going to rely on, you know, a guy, Matt Mervis, who came up as a left-hander last year and sucked, was terrible, might be a quad A player for all we know. And now you're going to have Patrick Wisdom platooning as the right-handed bat against first base. Patrick Wisdom, you know, the guy that has 33 hits since the last week of April 2023. Granted, of those 33 hits, what is it? 13 of them are home runs, but the dude literally averages maybe like 7 hits a month over the course of a whole year now of work. It's not like it was like just like a couple months. And so now you have question marks. You've made the lineup weaker and more of a gamble at this point. You know, we've already seen failure with the bullpen to create bullpen depth, failure to use the bullpen properly. There are 6 Cubs blown saves in the first 11 opportunities. There's a lot of question marks with some of these decisions that they don't seem to make sense to me. You know, and again, I told you guys yesterday in the DM or whatever, little birdie told me that, I mean, he's as good as a Red Sox first baseman, unless the Yankees swoop in here. But, you know, there's no reason for me to think that after his five years, he's got player rights, that he's not going to obviously refuse the assignment and be a free agent. Why would he let the Cubs bring him in this way? Tell him, you know, obviously he had the chance to sign with the Red Sox in the offseason, and something was told to him by Jed Hoyer that said, oh, I'm going to sign with the Cubs. I'm assuming Jeb told him that he was going to have a legitimate role with the Cubs. And Jed Hoyer, in typical Jed Hoyer fashion, was full of shit. Probably lied to him, as he always does. You never know when Jed's telling
assumption.
Until you feel we've seen
you
it
know
enough.
This? Inside sources? Come on, Kevin.
It's pattern
behavior.
He's a
33-year-old first baseman who's been all right.
I know he lied to KB.
Come on.
I know he's lied to other free agents plenty. So Jed Hoyer, you don't know it till the knife goes in. So, you know, in the end, you know, I think it's a stupid move. You move on. I think it's a mistake. You know, Matt Mervis better fucking rake. Patrick Wisdom better fucking rake. Or you're an idiot, Jed Hoyer. That's my opinion. Because Garrett Cooper, when playing every day, Miami was the last franchise to actually use him, right? What did he get? He was an all-star. You sent him to San Diego where they tried this platoon crap too. Instead of playing the guy every day. The guy last year, if he played every day, was on projection to hit 25 to 28 home runs if you look at the numbers. Like, that's Patrick Wisdom, except a better defender, 6'5" target, and a mentor as a first baseman, as opposed to a third baseman that has never played first base and is just over there out of desperation in like a Patrick Wisdom. So they've now created more question marks in a lineup that's already struggling. And to me, the move yesterday felt like Jed Hoyer was trying to shake things up because the offense was stale. And I think they cut the wrong person. And I know there's a loyalty to Patrick Wisdom in some way, shape, or form, but Patrick Wisdom has no business being on that roster if Garrett Cooper's the one being DFA. Sure, Wisdom can play the outfield mediocrely. He's a -7 defensive war, for God's sakes. So let's not like pretend like Patrick Wisdom's some defensive guru. So the Cubs got worse defensively. The Cubs got worse offensively yesterday, depth-wise. And now Michael Busch is pushed up. To me, it's all about Michael Busch's development. And I wanted Michael Busch protected. If you've been listening to the show, it's why I love the Cooper move in the first place. It gave him the opportunity to have those moments where he's maybe, you know, stumbling a little bit and just needs to see it from the bench and have a cage day. And with the desperation now without Cooper, you've got to pray that a guy, Patrick Wisdom, that gets one hit and then disappears for 7 days is your next bet. Or Matt Mervis, a guy that last time he got his opportunity, couldn't hit water if he fell out of a boat. You know, and no offense to Matt Mervis. Maybe he'll come back and prove he's not a quad A guy. But so far, he's proven to be a quad A guy. Don't give me his AAA stats because guess what? My grandma can hit 30 home runs at AAA at this point. AAA is so bad. There is so much bad pitching at AAA. So that's I guess that's where
don't
I was
tell
upset.
That I'm, to you know, Colson Montgomery,
but I'm over it.
Kevin,
I'm over it. We move on.
Yeah, don't tell that to Kevin or to Colson. Like you said, Kevin, this is a lot more about Michael Busch than Patrick Wisdom. They're obviously content and feel pretty good that he's going to be all right this year. I don't think he's going to have an OPS of like 1,000 the entire year. But Michael Busch is, I mean, again, maybe real deal over the top there when I said that last week, but he's going to be fine. Patrick Wisdom, Garrett Cooper, like I just don't really care about backup guys that much.
I like the guys that hit lefties better, and he hits lefties better than Wisdom does. The whole point was that
They're pretty even. That's also just not true. They're pretty even the entire career.
It's not pretty even when you go
one
back
guy
to
does
last
with
April.
Average. The other guy does with home runs. Like they have like similar WRC play. I just don't care that much about backup guys who aren't really going to play that much. Anyways,
well,
this really doesn't matter when guys are like when say Suzuki's back. Like it's not really going to matter that much. You're right though, Kevin. Like I'm not like completely against it because like because Wisdom still has options. They could have opted him to AAA and kept Garrett Cooper around, but we're assuming that maybe Garrett Cooper went up to Jed. He's like, hey man, I can kind of see the landscape here. Just let me go. Let me try to sign on somewhere else. And like, all right, you're right. We're not going to use that much.
Mitch,
we'll let
Dayton,
you go on your merry way.
Was Dayton one of your rivals in college?
No.
Oh, I thought Bradley played Dayton because I'm driving by. I was going to flick him off for you.
He can flick him off anyway. Indiana State and Loyola were our big one. Drake too.
Drake. Hate the Drake, huh?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to the home of Larry Bird right now. So Indiana State represents.
There you go. You can put that one up. Yeah. They were our big rivals this year. If it wasn't for Indiana State, we would have been in the tournament. Anyway, back to the Cub. Is there anything that you wanted to add on the Cooper thing before?
I just think that I think that my point is that it's more about developmental than anything. And Matt Patrick Wisdom doesn't do anything to help Michael Bush grow as a rookie. Garrett Cooper did. I think it's a mistake. Wisdom should have been at least set down and Cooper kept around. But you know what? We move on. And hopefully Matt Mervis proves that he's more than just a quad A guy. And we hope that Patrick Wisdom proves that he can get a hit more than once every 27 at bat.
Matt Mervis.
Give a shit if it's a home run or not.
Well, the other big news from Cubs land this week was Albert Alsley no longer the closer. They don't have a closer at the moment. It was looking rough. I mean, we've been talking about this last couple of weeks. It's been like looking a little dicey, kind of see. I think it was probably the right move, but now, like, who's your ninth inning guy? I think you have to add someone at some point, but like, how at this point, how do you think Council has handled that ninth inning, and who would you like to see in that role until they make a trade?
So last night, something happened. Hold on,
real quick. It doesn't have to be the ninth inning. Grow the fuck up. Go ahead.
Zoe is right. But that also using guys situation. In the eighth, yes, for mid spots, that works when you have multiple great relievers. If mainly when you only have one, you do mainly only have a closer for the ninth. But last night, Tuesday night, series opener against the Astros, Jordan Wicks goes six innings. Great start for him. Good stuff. Two runs. Both of them earned. Only one of them should have been earned because Cody Bellinger got high or something. I don't know. He lost two balls in the center field. But he did hit the home run in the first inning, so it's all fine. Ben Brown, who pitched two innings of relief in Saturday night's doubleheader, game two of the doubleheader, comes in on Tuesday, pitches only one inning, and we're all sitting there like, what the hell is this? Because Kyle Hendricks just got thrown away, exiled with a back injury, in quotes there. Kyle Hendricks, the best case scenario for Kyle Hendricks is that he gets the Jason Hayward treatment. He's getting paid a lot of money this year, $16 million. He's not 5 terrible starts. Give him the Jason Hayward treatment. Be like, work out in Arizona, and maybe if you get better, we use you. We're not going to use you. Love Kyle Hendricks, legend. But he's cooked. He's washed. I'm sorry. It's sad. We're moving on.
No, I was told that he's slow in April. That's all.
I don't think he's started. He's still revving up for April.
The Marlins start was really the true test for me because it's like, this is a very winnable game.
Yeah.
You're at home.
The worst hitting team.
Like, you had the good opponent excuse, and he still got
it. And you could tell how much the Marlins suck. He struck out 5 guys in 4 innings. He had 7 strikeouts in, like, his first 4 starts. But they still hit him. But Ben Brown, everyone's assuming, Ben Brown's just going to step in because he's been doing a great job in the rotation anyway. But now he's being used out of the bullpen. And we talked about it, Mitch, a little bit. I think maybe they're testing the waters here, testing out how, all right, Ben Brown, can you recover? Can we use you multiple times a week? Are you going to be our next closer? Because he has the stuff.
Sucks to be.
He has the stuff. And once Justin Steele is going to come back in May. So
your second best starting pitcher in the bullpen for one inning outings, a guy that can
also
go
know,
five
Kevin,
innings
that,
plus.
But we also know,
the rest
Kevin.
Of the staff,
Kevin, let me finish talking.
Sorry, I'm just.
I'm trying to answer your doubt. Ben Brown was injured last year at the end of the year. He hasn't pitched I think 2022, maybe he had close to 130 innings. It's not a guy who this year. He's not going to give you 160, 170, 180 innings. Like, there's going to be some pitch limitations there. This is how you, one, limit his innings, but two, still make him a valuable member of your pitching staff. Maybe it's not.
Three,
closer.
Not
Maybe
how
it
you
is.
Develop a starter, though.
Maybe
not how you develop a starting pitcher.
Dude, ask Mitch and Zoe, how did Chris Sale work out?
I also like to make a point about Ben Brown. His name is not tough enough to be a closer. That's the softest name.
What are you talking about? Big Bad Ben Brown?
No, it sounds like a Berenstain Bears character. Mr. Ben Brown, Mr. Fuzzy
Bears. That's disrespectful to Ben.
What's a good closer name for you?
Edwin Diaz.
Yeah, that is a yeah.
Zorro.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Kopech's borderline. Kopech is very borderline. I don't know.
Kopech is not giving up home runs if he wants to.
Andrew Chafin. That sounds like a closer name.
The name thing plays. Liam Hendricks is a closer's name.
I like how you guys are using like Bad Benny is like lightning Bad in a Benny. Bottle the examples. Nickname, like Adam Wainwright was a Cardinals closer when he first broke in. I see Praz in the chat. Yes, and now can you name off the dozens and dozens of pitchers that it didn't work out starting in the bullpen when they were starters? I mean,
it's worked out for the Cubs. Justin Steele, they brought him up. He was in the bullpen, easing him in, giving him some innings, working him through stuff. Then he's developed as a starter. Colleagues examples. Come on, we can't act like it's not an automatic fail that a guy just is going to stunt his development because he only pitches 60 innings.
A bad example.
But here's my concern as well. Again, why are you putting your second best statistical starter here in this season so far with Justin Steele out in the bullpen when every single game counts? And I mean, yes, I grant it, you've blown six saves already, and that doesn't include the other leads that they've been blown that were tie ball games as well. But the fact is, don't you want – I mean, you have a pitching staff that literally can't get through four innings other than one guy. And you're going to put one of the guys that can actually get through five innings where he's doing the one-inning bumpers now. Now, Jordan Wicks yesterday, huge breakthrough, finally conserved his pitch count, got deep into a ball game.
Pitched season-high 104 innings in 2022. That's why.
That's fine, but the Cubs are so conservative. You've got to stretch him out sooner or later, man. You can't just say, "Well, in 2022, he only threw that." You've got to stretch guys out.
It's like what we were talking about, like hitting wise. Andrew Vaughn, they just fucked him over. Like you didn't just go from like, okay, a guy pitches 100 innings in 6 months to like, we're putting you every game, every start that you're out there, it counts. High pressure stuff. We expect you to go 150 innings this year. You don't make that jump right away.
How has any rookie pitcher in Major League Baseball ever done it then? I don't know. That's just crazy to think that they should have only thrown one inning apiece for the first three or four years in the league.
All right, so counterpoint.
And maybe we can stretch him out to
110. Can you put Assad in the bullpen?
No, you don't.
So who would put Wicks in the bullpen?
Right now, you don't need to put any of them in the bullpen. You need to actually, you know what, be a good GM and make sure you don't like underpay and take minor league contracts
at
the beginning of the offseason and not sign guys like Andrew Chafin.
This is why Ben Brown's being used in the
bullpen. Now that you're stuck here, I see Luke Little as an option, but he has too high of a whip. A 1.5 whip is not something good for a closer.
We're talking about Ben Brown in the bullpen, why he's in the bullpen. So I'm asking you, if it's not
He shouldn't be in the bullpen. That's the point. He shouldn't be in the bullpen when you have a guy who's your second best starter.
Once Justin Steele comes back,
he's not back right now, is he?
I said, when Justin Steele comes back, what's the move there? Because I'm telling you, I don't know this. I'm not in the clubhouse. I'm not talking to Craig Counsell, mm-hmm. Jed Hoyer. This is just my thought, is that they're preparing him to be a high leverage reliever. And you don't wait to do that. You have to ease him in to see if he can rebound multiple times.
Well, here's me. I think Ben Brown is a better starter than Assad. So if you had to choose between Brown and Assad, I'd put Assad, who's more of a veteran guy that actually has pitched out of the pen, in the pen. But that's just me. Ben Brown that's fine. That's why I don't agree with Ben Brown being, you know, and you pull him in for a one inning pisser tomorrow when you got a 4-run lead, and then you let Leiter go an extra inning, and then of course have to pull him. Like some of the bullpen usage itself has been question mark. Council's still learning the guys. I understand that, but I just don't think that a Ben Brown guy with his body is built to be a long stretched out starter. Like that's what he's built for. He has that long body. He shouldn't theoretically have the same kind of arm trouble guys that generate arm speed with smaller frames do. Like he should be more effortless. So he's a guy that can actually be stretched out. I'd be more concerned with guys. You've got a guy like Jordan Wicks who yesterday finally got through five innings for the first time in his major league career and how many starts. And, you know, Javier Assad, again, there you go. Mike Praz, you're going to go ahead and utilize stats from July 1st, 2023, but we're going to ignore Patrick Wisdom's stats since April of 2023. Anyway, but you've got this situation. Assad is also proven to be a very good pitcher out of the bullpen. What are his numbers out of the bullpen compared to numbers as a starter? Ben Brown, I'm sure he can handle it. I want Ben Brown. I think Ben Brown is a future ace. I believe that Ben Brown will be a better starting pitcher than Justin Steele. So for me, I feel like the Cubs are wasting time by throwing this type of rotation out there when you have right now Steele's out. So you got Shota, Tyon, Ben, Assad, and Wicks. That's your five-man rotation. So what are you throwing out there until Steele comes back? What are you throwing out there if anybody else suffers a setback? What?
Mitch, you got
There's no plan there. There's no depth plan there.
Take control of your goddamn show, Mitch.
I'm enjoying this.
Well, Mitch, what are your thoughts? Because I mean,
it just depends on your depth plan.
Sox fans have gone through like starting pitchers coming up through the bullpen. Not every situation is comparable, but like if you have a young starting pitchers coming up, you have a hole in your bullpen. Obviously, what do you do?
I kind of look at it, and this isn't a great example because it didn't work out all that well for Michael Kopech. But you would say the Cubs are trying to contend this year, right? Like that's a very winnable division. They're off to a good start. This year, in theory, you could make the playoffs. I think you could win a playoff series. They're a contending team in the NL. Because of that, I'm trying to put my team in the best position to win. And I think a lot of it, like with Kopech, when the Sox did with him in 2021, they knew long-term they wanted him to be in the rotation. Now, obviously, we saw how that worked out with him. But, like, that was the goal for him. Like, they viewed him as a top-of-the-line starter. But this first year, after, like, you know, coming in off of surgery, they kept him in the bullpen and they threw him in some high leverage situations and it worked out.
Prez got a fids on Fangraphs right now.
I can see the same
thing. Well, actually, my class is about to come. They're not waiting outside the door.
I wouldn't be
opposed. Get him in there. Ask them their thoughts on Ben Brown, Kevin.
Yeah, there you go. But
I mean, if we're going to use starter reliever stats, Ben Brown also he's given up a 783 OPS as a reliever, and then his opponent's OPS when he's a starter is .366. So I don't know.
Come on, that was one bad inning against the Rangers. What are we doing here? But yeah, I think like if you're trying to like stretch him out slowly, like I would have no problem with the Cubs using him as a high leverage guy out of the bullpen until you get the rest of rotation. Until Steele comes back, especially if he's being effective out there, because you really don't have any other guys they can trust. If he's been good late in game, or you know. Look serviceable.
It seems like
my last point before I go, I gotta go because my students are here. My last point is leverage stuff is great, but you also have to question whether or not a guy can bounce back every day. Throwing Ben Brown out there 84 times in a season compared to throwing him out there for 125 innings, that might be just as detrimental or worse for his arm health.
That's why they're trying it right now.
So I gotta go.
Thanks, Kevin. That was good stuff.
Go Cubs, go. No Bush drinks this week. We did six last week and
he felt bad for us, Kevin.
Yeah, not yeah, right. God, you felt bad for our liver. So take care, guys. Have a great week. We'll see you guys later,
Kevin.
If you guys haven't been watching on YouTube,
we don't have to agree. It's a good baseball.
Yeah, that's a good. Yeah, that's why you let
me. You guys not noticing that I'm getting the animations?
Yeah, we saw it.
That's what I was about to say. For those of you listening podcast, this is why you got to watch on YouTube. Because while that debate was going on, Zoe's like giving the signs for truckers. There's balloons flying everywhere. It was quite entertaining.
Yeah, I got two truck horns, and then I thought I was going to get Final Destination. That's when I was trying to.
I hate
that shit.
I'll tell you what, though. It kind of sucks. So this weekend, I was like, you know, it's a nice day out. Decided to travel to St. Louis, catch a game, see what the Cubs competition was. It was the Cardinals playing the Brewers. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to throw a little money on the – I really had no dog in the fight. I'll throw a little money on the Cardinals. Sonny Gray's pitching. We'll enjoy a ball game. And it was nice because I thought – I was like, all right, these are two pretty good teams. It will be nice to see, you know, not have to watch White Sox baseball for a day. Although I swear to God, I was so frustrated because, like I said, I didn't really have a dog in the fight, but I was rooting for the Cardinals just because I had like money. First inning, they get guys on first and second, and Lars Nootbaar hits a bomb to the warning track. Guy robs the home run, so the runners advance second and third, one out. They could not bring him home. Second and third, one out. Next inning, they also have two guys on, no outs, couldn't bring him home. Sonny Gray pitches a gem. Seventh inning, score still tied. Brewers get a single. Two-run score. That was the game. It was like watching the White Sox all over again. Like, no hit the scores in first position. I was so frustrated reading that game. I was like, this is just like watching the Sox. But long story short, at NL Central, the Brewers are first place with that lineup. That lineup doesn't look that great. They play good defense.
Wait.
They play good baseball. But I think that's a very winnable division for the Cubs. There's no reason to win that division.
I have a new surefire way for everyone to make money. Whenever the big homie Lance Lynn is pitching, take the other team first five innings.
Yeah.
Lance is getting lit up like he fucking stole something every outing.
He's getting hammered
the first five. Yeah.
He is the ultimate. He's reminded me a lot of the John Lackey's last few years. Like John Lackey has still had a solid 2016-17 with the Cubs. Lance Lynn kind of steeper decline here. like he'll still have starts where, like, you know, he'll strike out 7-8 guys, go 5-6 innings. But you're right, he still gets hit. Like, he'll still be like 3 runs, you know, 2 home runs, 3 walks. Like, he's struggling out there.
There's a lot of, they just sent Jordan Walker down, who everyone was like, this is the best prospect in baseball. So they moved him down. Yeah, and like, the Cardinals country are starting to panic because these weekday games are looking like Sox games, like 20,000 people there. And like, that's like a big deal. I see a lot of people like, well, I've never seen it like this. This is so depressing. I was like, this looks
the
like
Cardinals are bad. Sonny Gray, that was a good signing. That was one thing I was interested in, if the Cubs didn't get Imanaga. I think Sonny Gray is going to be good for them, but like, there are other moves. No idea what the hell they were thinking. I mean, I know they've had a lot of injuries, but like, that team is just not good. Paul Goldschmidt is getting older. He's on the decline now.
Well, Arenado looked.
Arenado's declining.
Their numbers, they really haven't. Yeah, it's been tough.
The computers, like every year, like even last year, when we remember how bad they were last year, that in the summer, Fangraphs, like all the projections are like, no, this is still like a, like 83, 85 win team, and they just kept sucking. This year, they started the year as the favorite. They're not good. They're not going to be good. They're bad.
The guy that's really frustrating for me, and I'm not, like I said, I'm not a Cardinals fan. I don't really care. But like, I remember when I was at Bradley, like the big things, the Peoria Chiefs are down there, Nolan Gorman coming up. They had a Nolan Gorman bobblehead day. They're like, this guy is going to be the next big thing. Their whole marketing campaign was about, like, see the next future Cardinal star. He's looked very pedestrian up there too. Like, all these prospects they had, like Walker and Gorman, and now their veterans aren't hitting. It's rough in Cardinals land. I can see that imploding quickly. I wouldn't be surprised if they're selling at the trade deadline.
That's why, again, entering the year, like, people are like, oh, like, what are the expectations for the Cubs? Like, I know that the Brewers are surprising me. I didn't think they were going to be this good, but like, you're seeing signs that they just lost back to back games to the Pirates, and they beat up on the Cardinals instead. But like, the Brewers, they don't. Clip it. I don't know. They don't really scare me. I don't sweat the Brewers.
They shouldn't. Outside of Reese Hoskins, like, there's no.
Do you sweat the Brewers? Although, do you sweat the Brewers?
I just said it. In 2024, I don't sweat the Brewers. Fuck, that's gonna.
The way they won that series in St. Louis too, because like, they didn't have a ton of offense. It's everything that I wanted the Sox to be this year almost. It's because they're playing pretty clean baseball. I don't think they have a ton of talent on that team, but they're not making a lot of mistakes, and their pitching's held up surprisingly well. So, but I don't think that's sustainable. I think the Cubs on paper are the best.
Yeah,
like, there's no reason to win that division.
And you look at the Cubs, they're 14-9. You know, they have the 6 blown saves, but like, they lost the four blown saves with the lead in the 8th or 9th was Edward Alzolay. So like, obviously that could kill the Cubs, right? If they just never figure out their high leverage spots in the bullpen. Like, we saw that in 2019, Cubs had a good offensive hitting team. Defense was all right. The pitching staff was okay, but the bullpen was terrible. They signed Craig Kimbrel in June. He came up. He wasn't ready. He was kind of bad. Cubs just kept blowing games in September. That could happen again. But look at the resiliency, guys. Like, Justin Steele, you lose your ace in the 5th inning on opening day. He's going to miss, like, it's going to be close to 5 weeks. You start the season without Jameson Taillon, another guy who you expected to be, like, your workhorse, like, innings eater, even if it wasn't always going to be quality, you expect, like, solid work from Jameson Taillon. He barely started, and he looked great in his first start against the Marlins. But, like, right away, you're down 2 starting pitchers. You lose one of your key relievers from last year. Julian Merriweather goes down. He's on the 60-day. He's out for 2 months. Christopher Morel starts off hot. Say Suzuki starts out hot. Christopher Morel has, like, he's on a Patrick Wisdom run right now. He's 2 for 46 or something like that in the past 3 weeks. He's been terrible at the plate. Seiya Suzuki, hurt, oblique, back in the middle of May. Cody Bellinger, he's gotten hot now, but he was bad the first couple weeks. Nico Horner was bad the first couple weeks. All this, they're half a game out of first place. When the Cubs get healthy, and, like, you know, fingers crossed, it's not guaranteed. There can be other injuries down the road. But guys are stepping up all over the place. We talked about the bullpen sucking, the starting rotation not going deep. They're still winning games. Craig Counsell working his magic. I'll take it. I don't care. I don't care if it's stupid bad luck or stupid good luck. It's about time the Cubs get some. Or the past couple of years, they get all the bad breaks. But this year, they're overcoming those. Yensi Almonte, I was wrong about him. I thought he was on DFA watch, like, after his first week. has like eight straight perfect innings, or not perfect innings, but like scoreless innings out of the bullpen. Mark Leiter Jr., fan favorite, killer against lefties. If they can just figure out the closer thing, the Cubs are going to be, they're on pace to win 99 games right now. This is a good team.
That seems like a big predicament, though. Like, I still don't have, like, so who do you want to, you'll keep in Ben Brown in the high leverage role. We'll call it, let's say ninth inning.
Like, Ben Brown's the guy, I think. And if it's not him, it's a trade, right? Like, they just have to. Because this is a good team. You can't waste it. You can't waste this roster. You're not always going to have good teams every year. You can't take it for granted. When you have a good team, you can't just let one flaw. And the Cubs have, you know, we've seen the list. It's at least top three, top two. A lot of them have them as the best farm system. You have guys that you can trade if you need a killer closer, whatever it is. So, like, that should not be an excuse. Jed Hoyer can't pull a Rick Hahn 2022. Like, he has to do something if it's July and there's still the same issues, because that is going to kill them if they don't figure out what to do.
It's very simple. Just build a bullpen like the Tigers. Just do that.
Have all your young guys be really good.
they are surprised. Yeah, that is a surprising bullpen.
That's why they keep winning, because their bullpen just shuts you down.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like they're scoring a lot of runs. Like, they just get a lead and then you're done.
Yep. Well, that we'll segue back to the White Sox really quick, because a couple other points I wanted to touch on, but I wanted to get the Cubs stuff while Fids was on. So, you know, one of the things with Pedro, we talked about him earlier, like, his big thing was like, we're going to come out there and prepare every day to kick your ass. And this is another reason why I think he should be fired. This is an interesting stat I just saw from The Athletic. The Twins have really struggled this year against off-speed pitches. And that's why one of the reasons the record stinks is because teams figure this out. They don't give them many fastballs. The White Sox threw 69% fastballs and 66% fastballs these last two games. The highest rates the Twins have saw all year. Surprise, surprise, they were knocking the ball around. They all look good all of a sudden. Yet again, another reason why this team, it's not even just the lack of talent, but they don't put these guys in the same position to win. A couple more stats here before I pose this question. So WRC Plus, White Sox are 64th. That is last in the MLB. They have 12 home runs on the year, also last. Base running metric, BRS, they are a negative 2.4, which is 27th. Their ERA, 5.14, 28th in the league. They have allowed the 28th most homers, or I guess 28th in homers allowed, 32. And defensive runs saved. We were promised the defense would be better. They are at negative 13, which ranks 28th. Zoe, do you think this is going to be the worst baseball team of all time? Do you think they can break the Mets record?
Yeah.
There we go.
Wait, hold on. I got something for that.
Yes! 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 History!
Like,
they've been shut out eight times this year and they have 12 home runs. Like, they only have a couple more home runs and they have shutout losses.
Unless they clean house, which we all know they won't do. I mean, if you don't, insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. They keep rolling out the same bunch of fucking double-A that's being generous players and thinking they're going to win major league games. And then, like you said, just that stupid shit about don't throw the Twins fastballs. It's like Pedro's like, fuck the stat nerds. I'm going to throw them 60% fastballs.
To kick your ass.
To own the limbs. Well, guess what, dude? Didn't work. And it's just, it's incompetence after incompetence after incompetence. And like I said, I'm not even like angry about it anymore. It's just, it sucks. I feel like they're robbing baseball from me because it's tough to watch these games, man. It is very hard to watch a White Sox game right now.
And it was tough last year, but at least like this year we were promised like, hey, you know, they're not going to win many games, but they're going to play clean baseball. They're going to run the bases hard. They're playing good defense. They're playing the game the right way. And they haven't. Like, it's like I would be fine with these losses. Like the first series against the Tigers, they got swept that series. But at least in those games, they did play clean baseball. The pitching looked good. I'm like, this is at least a digestible product that I can watch like the whole year. Like, yeah, but like now, and now the effort looks like it's got like there's some guys out there that don't look like they want to be there. We touched on Benintendi earlier. That's why I do think Peyton, I mean, he's got it. Who, I mean, would you, okay, if they fired Pedro, though, would you want Charlie to be the interim manager? Or is there someone else that, like, that's out there right now that you would like to see him bring in for the rest of the year?
I don't think they could pay someone enough money. Who the hell's going to want to jump on this grenade?
Yeah.
I mean, LaRusse is still hanging around.
Nobody wants to.
He's still on payroll.
Tony would say no. No one wants to stink next to their name. This is how you'll be remembered for the all time as the manager of the worst baseball team in history. There's no getting that off, dude. There's no taking a tomato bath to get that skunk stink off you. There's no getting that off you. You were the manager for the worst team in the history of baseball. That is how you'll be known for the rest of your life.
But hey, I have to say, okay, a bit of optimism here. I'm trying to find something here for you guys. 3-20, AAA players all over the field, but like some of the young guys are going to come up, right? Like
they have to. I don't know.
Like some of the young guys are going to come up this year. Like so, some of the guys are going to be better talent, just pure talent wise. Maybe that's like until June, July, but like they're coming, and then. But also on the flip side, like Eric Fetty's going to get traded. So, like, you're going to lose your best starting pitcher.
Well, we have Mike Clevenger coming still. So
that's true.
We got that to look forward to.
Fetty looked really good last night. But
he's looking good.
I don't understand at 3-20 why Pedro's still employed. And, I mean, Baltimore, who's good, is already being like, fuck it, and calling their kids up. What's going to happen to the White Sox if they call their kids up? They're going to not win games?
Yeah,
I mean, what are we doing? Like, just call these kids up. Who gives a shit?
Well, everybody was complaining that Andrew Vaughn got fucked over. So
part of that, though, is because he was on a team with pressure to win, and he was playing out of position. There's a little bit more pressure than being on a 3-22 team with 500 people in the stands. Like,
no pressure for any of these kids because there's only one way this team can go. And you might as well let them learn by seeing major league pitching.
I was
still going to face major league pitching.
Oh. I feel the same way. I was at first, I was like, hey, let Montgomery stay in the minors till like late August, September. But like, I agree now at this point. And it was a good point that was we were talking about with Nastrini and like Cannon earlier. Letting these guys struggle in the big leagues, I think that's important. Like understanding how to you're going through your lumps. How do you adjust to major league pitching? And I think because that's something that you're talking about earlier, like that Lucas Giolito talked about why it was so beneficial for him because Rick Renteria kept putting him out there, letting him struggle. So like, yeah, the worst ERA in baseball, but it's him long term.
We've all played on teams. We've all played a team sport or whatever. What brings a team closer together than overcoming some kind of adversary? You know what I mean? Like, if they call these kids up and they could go off on, like, just like a 10-game win streak, who gives a shit? How that team's bonded for
it.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
let's not have three.
You could build off that core.
Yeah. Now, Fids brings up the point that, like,
yeah, just win.
You do want a winning mindset, which, fair, but the AAA Charlotte team. Not good. They're not winning many games. Now, AA Birmingham, they're tearing it up down there. So, like, you know, we'll let some of those guys, like some of the Quiros and like ERTs, you know, I'm willing to like, I don't know if I'm rushing them up this year, but some of your, yeah, I mean, some of the guys you got in AAA that are looking good, like, you know, why not bring them up?
We got. I was thinking about that. I know that I don't think their main guys. Actually, no, bad example. I was gonna say the Orioles, like they were. That was 2021 though. I don't think their main prospects were up yet. They lost 110 games that year. But there's still some players from that team there, but I don't think it was most of the young guys. So maybe a bad example. But I was going to bring that up too, Kevin. It's like, do you really want all your like high-priced, respected rookies just losing day in, day out?
But they're already doing that.
So yeah.
The only one that's not, I think that's why you could probably keep, you know, now they have a legitimate Project Birmingham where the Barons actually look good and are winning games. So then I could see where that would be useful. But you got a lot of these guys, like, and Nastrini, I don't understand why they say. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, if they do decide to do what I think is the right thing and call these kids up and let them learn because there's no pressure, you got to boot Pedro. Get that fucking loser out of here.
He's got to get out. I'm with you. I thought before it didn't matter, but now that guy, he needs to get him out of there.
Well, and like So it's like the Andrew Vaughn thing. I think he does care. It's not like for a lack, like, you know, we talked about, like, you know, like guys that don't care. Like, Pedro does care. Like, I think he's almost pressing too hard, and that rubs off on a lot of the players too. Like, and that's like the thing with like Vaughn. Like, Vaughn clearly needed some time off to like get a reset. He got Sheets that's hitting well. Like, give him a couple days on the bench where he can just work in the cage, like refine his swing. And he throws, like, that was frustrating to me, like, seeing him throw him back out there in that doubleheader. He's talking about how, like, hey, like, we got to get in. I think he had a quote earlier this week where he's like, yeah, we're going to be back in the cages, like, early tomorrow, like, an extra session. Like, these guys are pressing too much, and, like, it's forcing. You need – they're not loose at all. They don't play clean baseball. It looks like they're tight out there. They do need a new guy. They need a new guy at the helm. It does make a difference. I agree. Especially if you have all these young kids, don't corrupt them with Pedro.
Pedro Grifol is acting like he's the stereotypical like baseball manager in a movie from like the 80s or something. Just try hard, no one respects him. Like, again, we've talked about this. He's no leader of anything. Like, no one gives a shit what he says. The team is getting worse. So the little things that we're supposed to get better, earlier, like you guys keep saying,
when you said like Pedro
are worse.
Yep. But, like, Mitch, what you're saying is you're like, yeah, you can tell Pedro cares. That's great. I care about my dad's shoulder surgery, but I'm not
about to fucking
do it.
Yep.
You know what I mean? You got to let someone that knows what the hell they're doing do it. And, like, Pedro just ain't that guy. This was his shot at being a manager. He ain't him. And so you got to call the kids up, but first you got to get him the fuck out of there. Because you're just going to repeat the cycle if you call them kids up and let him be the mentor.
And it'd be one thing if you had no one to, like, manage the shit, but you have a guy in Charlie Montoya on your bench already that has taken teams to the playoffs before. So it's not like you have some, like, scrub there. Like, he knows how to run a major league team. I'm not saying he's the long-term answer, but, like, you would be serviceable. I think you'd be in good hands letting Montoya run the ship the rest of the way.
So. Counterpoint, last counterpoint, spin zone. Brandon Hyde, who used to be Cubs bench coach, I think first base coach, he got hired by the Orioles after 2018. So he's been there since 2019. The Orioles were awful for those, you know, 2019, 2021, that 2020 season, whatever. But hey, year three, 2022 is when they started to turn the corner. Obviously, last year they had the big year. Pedro Grifol, does it? Year three? You got to wait for year three next year? No. I don't know. I'll try to find something for you guys. I don't know.
Nah, it's bad.
It'd be loser. I'm pretty sure he gets his post-game comments from AI before he goes to see the reporters.
Well, you know what he's going to say. They all sound the same. You know what he's going to say before he even gets up there. Well, we're going to flush it. You know, we're gonna get back at it tomorrow. Work hard. We're going to put this thing around. These guys are professionals. Are like,
oh, these guys want to win. I want to win. Everybody wants to win, but we're just not winning. Well, no shit, dude. I want $1 million, but it doesn't happen. Like,
The real winner, obviously, is now rebuild 2.0 of the 2010s, 2020s, the White Sox. But the real winner here from all of this is Ricky Renteria. Like, talk about legacy guy who a fun team under him, and then once he got out, like, just
he got fired too.
Hate everybody else was hit.
Someone brought this up. I forget who said, but like he got fired this for like the same reason, like because he cared too much. Like that wild card game, he did not want to make a mistake. He was managing not to lose, and it was a horribly managed game, and that's ultimately why he got fired. But the difference between him and Pedro, who I both think care, Ricky could get the most out of his guys, and he held people accountable. He was not afraid to put you on the bench if you were dogging it to first. He was also very good at empowering players, like we mentioned. Like Lucas Giolito talked about it. Like, he let guys go out there and struggle, and, like, he was putting them on the right track. Like, you could see it was going in the right direction, and they played hard. And at least that team was fun to watch because they busted their ass 90 feet every day. This team does.
So we obviously know that 2020 season was just bizarro world, 60-game season. How much are you willing to give up to win that title that year? Whatever. But, like, his biggest thing that year was like, hey guys, we need pitching. Go trade. We need more pitching if we want to win in October. And Rickon's kind of like, sorry, we're not gonna go for it yet. Yeah, like, that was his biggest crime, asking Rick Hahn for pitching.
Yeah, they had no starters outside of, like, because Keuchel was good that year. Now, there were some warning signs that he was getting hit hard, but he was good that year. But, like, outside of him and Giolito, if it got to a third game, because I was still writing for Fanside at the time, I remember writing, like, a preview for that. I'm like, if this goes to a third game, the Sox are in trouble, because they didn't have a third starter. And that's why he had to do that, like, weird bullpen.
Yeah.
I don't even know if you call it a bullpen.
He didn't have a first starter.
Put some respect on Dallas Keuchel's 2020 top five
Cy Young season.
Yeah, he was good
at Giolito was a stud.
No. Because you want to know why? Look at the history with the White Sox recently, Dallas Keuchel being the poster child. How many times has their big free agent signing they've let go, and then no one, he's unemployed for the rest of his life?
Yeah.
What does that tell you?
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right.
They want to save the world like Adam LaRoche.
And it's going to be Martin Maldonado is going to be the next one.
Yes. Well, you have to keep him around. Make him the bench coach.
I was off on that one. I thought that would be more beneficial for these guys than it is. He stinks. Now, I do owe Gavin Sheets an apology. I thought I was surprised this offseason that he made the team, like, because his defense was terrible. He wasn't doing anything at the plate. But he's gotten out there despite these horrible circumstances. Not a lot of line of protection. The average doesn't do, like, it doesn't look, his numbers don't look as good as he's actually been. He's been hitting the ball really hard consistently. So props to him. I owe him an apology. He's played well. It's been nice to see.
He's hitting lefty-lefty, too. He's not just a one-trick pony. And, you know, I will give him credit. And it's wild what happens when you play a guy at his actual position. He looks decent at first base. He looks fine. All you people hating on the goatee can go suck it. I mean, the guy's hidden. Let him go. Let the man live. You know, maybe all it took was a goatee.
Yeah, I'd keep him at first. As long as he's hitting, keep Eloy at DH, keep Juan on the bench, give him a week or so to reset. I think that's what I'd like to see. All right, we'll wrap things up here. I'll give each of you a chance. Final thoughts. It could be a Cubs thing, could be a Sox thing. Final thoughts from the week. I'll start so you guys get a chance to think about what you want to say. So the Sox season, obviously, it's been tough. It's been tough to watch. So you're looking for very, like, you know, small moral victories to motivate yourself to tune in every day. But I, like, the guy that I've been monitoring throughout the season, I'm very excited about watching Crochet pitch every week because I do think he has the potential to be the next Chris Sale. His stuff is there. Now, he's gotten knocked around his last two starts, and Fids did a great job of breaking this down, like, last week with a lot of these young guys. It's kind of about they're going to make adjustments on you. If you have early success, how do you respond? So this is a Twins lineup, not necessarily the best. It's a beatable Twins lineup. It's not going up against a juggernaut like the Phillies. It's not that they have no talent, but I think this will be an interesting start to see how he responds after getting knocked around a little bit against a very winnable team. So I'm excited to see how he pitches today. Because, like, really, quite frankly, he's one of the few bright spots that we have to look forward to between him and Fetty. I mean, those are the only two guys that, like, I've circled, like, okay, I know I want to watch these games because at least we have a chance, in theory, to win when they're on the bump so far. So hopefully he turns things around, but it'll be, this is going to be a good test for him today. See how he responds. Although we'll go to you.
Quick two things. Christopher Morel went from worst third baseman, like probably worst defender in baseball the first week of the season. Two, he's back to league average. That's all we've been asking for. Unfortunately, he's like one of the worst hitters in baseball right now, too. So that's not good. But if he does struggle, or if the Cubs need a boost offensively in the summer, and I've talked about it with Kevin yesterday, the Cubs have options. And, like, right now, he's no Edgar Cuero right now who's tearing up Double A, but Matt Shaw is looking like Chris Bryant 2.0 down there. Like, this guy is hitting everything. I think he's going to be Kevin's new favorite player when he comes up. If the Cubs need that boost from, like, offensively, a DH or a third base, if Morel keeps struggling and you need offense, Matt Shaw is looking like your, like, prototype hitter. Goes the opposite way. He'll turn on a mistake inside corner. He's been better. He's been starting at third base at Double A. Looks to be improving there, so that's a good sign. He might be. I mean, I think he's like at least top 40 prospect. Some lists have him like top 30. Matt Shaw might be like the toast of Chicago. Like come the second half of the season.
All right, so.
Also, Drew Thorpe.
Yeah, no, we're here. I'm courteous, so I mute my microphone when I'm not speaking when I'm in the car. But.
But hey, shots fired. Point taken.
First of all, I think it's adorable that you think I'm going to think about what I say before I say it. Second of all, I want to give just a major shout out to all the other shows out there, all the content creators, all the guys like you, Mitch, who have to sit out there and you're churning out blog after blog. This team is horseshit. They are horseshit. Historically bad team, setting records for bad after game after game. And yet, here we are, like lapdogs, just lapping it all up, watching it, doing. I'm talking about like doing shows about it, writing about it. And I think that says something about White Sox fans. Are we dumb? Probably. Do we like to just drink and it's an excuse? Yes. But we are loyal as shit. And I think this really goes to show it. I think we deserve better. I think everybody knows that. And it's just, I don't know, man. I know it's always darkest before the dawn and all this shit, but this is bad, dude. This is real bad. And then to your point, Mitch, about Crochet, I'm not going to bet against the Sox tonight. I haven't when Crochet pitches, but I do take the over for him K's. The only time he didn't hit it was Philly because he was out before he fucking turned the game on. But I think he can dice up Minnesota pretty good. Still no confidence in this team winning a game. But so that's my bet tonight is just go over on Crochet K's.
You know what? I know we joke around. I give you shit for betting against the Sox. I personally wouldn't do it. But, you know, if that's what you have to do, quite frankly, like, yeah, you might as well make some money on them. Being dog
tough
shit.
Tough one Tuesday, though, if you bet the minus one and a half.
Yeah.
Double whammy. Double whammy there.
Looking at the record, though, I feel like you're probably still in the, the green?
Is it the green.
Yeah, is that the right term? Yeah.
Oh, we're deep in the green, buddy. We're about to get married in the green. We're so deep in that bitch.
Yeah. The Sports Mockery White Sox fans, they're going to eventually have a group together to, like, buy the White Sox with all these winnings.
Not me. I will not be contributing because I haven't made any money off of them. In fact, I've actually lost money on them because last time I was in Chicago, I bet on Crochet and he got knocked around by the Reds. So I'm $30 in the minus right now.
It's been good, man.
Thank you guys for hopping on. Just a reminder, show sponsor Sports Mockery, sportsmockery.com. If you are a diehard Sox or Cubs fan, you can show it by visiting Homage. Get a cool shirt. They got a lot of other cool shirts there, too. You know, it's the draft this week. You can show your support for Caleb Williams. Scan that QR code, buy yourself a nice shirt. Then you can read about these crappy teams in Sports Mockery and the Bears' new quarterback. Just a reminder, this is a kind of a weird scheduling thing. Pinwheels and Ivy, usually Wednesdays, 8 p.m. Central. We'll be back at the normal schedule next week. You can also join me here at noon next Wednesday for the Pinwheels pregame show. Get you geared up for the main episode with Aldo, Fizz, and Zo.
Mitch, I want to throw something at you. Instead of calling it the pregame episode, can we just call it Have a Nooner with Mitch?
All right, I like it. Works for me.
Come on. That's good shit. You can sell shirts with that. There's sponsorship opportunities with Nooner Beer.
I was going to say, get on the phones and sell that to High Noon.
Have a Nooner with Mitch.
The ladies are going to love it. It's going to drive the ladies crazy. Have a Nooner with Mitch.
Mitch drinking a High Noon before he goes to work?
Yeah, that's probably.
No, we'll get you one of those koozies that makes it look like it's like a Red Bull can.
There we go.
We've noticed every Wednesday his like reports on the news have been slurring his words. He's been horrible out there. You don't know what it is.
He just gets really into his reports. He's emotional.
Hey, thank you guys for hopping on. You're welcome back anytime you want to talk some ball during your lunch break or whatnot. Thank all of you guys for listening. We'll be back normal showtime next week at 8, and then have a nooner with Mitch, name pregame or Primo's pregame show, back once again at noon. Have a guys rest of your week.
Rebuild of the favorites, we here for the latest, yeah. South side or the north side, not tuned to the greatest. Home team for the home teams, both sides got our own rings, on the mound or the long ball, but we don't pull the wrong strings, yeah. It's that time of the year now. Wrigley or Gantee, so the whole league that we hear now. New show with a new mood, discussions and interviews. Trade rumors that might be. This is Pinwheels and Knife. Yeah. This is what you waiting for, yeah. You can put it on the board, yeah. Every season, nigga, it all change. Take me out to the bar game. This is what you waiting for, yeah.
This is what you waiting for.
You can put it on the board. Every season, make it all change. Take me out to the bar game. This is what you waiting for, yeah. You can put it on the board, yeah. Every season, make it all change.
Take me out to the bar game.